Welcome to the Kanem, where humans and aliens converse, and where all the dots are connected. I'm Nancy of Zeta Talk, an emissary for aliens from Zeta Reticuli. They are here to warn of great cataclysms on Earth and advise how to survive this. The pending pole shift is not the end. Man will make his next leap forward to live a better time when aliens will live among us. The Zetas have described the Earth as a schoolhouse, self-learning, where we learn fastest by doing and realize our mistakes because the full brunt of our mistakes is instantly apparent. In this interaction with spirits, souls, whether incarnated or disincarnate, is allowed, but only under tight rules to limit this interaction to counseling, not interference. The rule of non-interference prevails. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Free Will, written July 1995. Non-interference can best be explained if you keep in mind that nothing can be done by an alien unless it is through a human. Nothing. In this, they must wait until a human gives the call, signaling an interest in having a conference. We are not here to rescue you. You have free will as to your associations. Humans do not, in general, understand how much control they can exert over their interaction with entities not native to the Earth. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. When exceptions are made by the administrative force in our part of the universe, the Council of Worlds, it's to exert influence on things, not people. People are free to make their choices in this, their self-learning schoolhouse. That said, under what circumstances does counseling occur? The human is in charge and makes the call. Well, just what is the call? And I quote from Zeta Talk, The Call, written July 1995. The concept of the call is but an extension of concepts humans are familiar with. One goes to the porch to call the family in to dinner. One picks up the phone to call another in order to converse. When giving the call to aliens, humans are issuing a request for contact, without a voice, without words, but the meaning is sent and understood nonetheless, by telepathic and other such wordless and wireless means. The call is made, received, understood, and a conference is subsequently arranged. There are times of loneliness, despair, wrenching concern for a loved one injured or in trouble. Times the individual wants to offer themselves in the loved one's stead. Times when the path to follow is not clear and there is indecision and hesitation at the gateway. Times when another is viewed as a blockage to be removed by physical and potentially violent and harmful means. These sorts of times occur, not daily, but many times in a lifetime. These are times of the call. The individual is in control of alien interactions affecting him or herself. This is, in fact, intuitively understood by most humans, even those who are unaware of alien influence over their lives. The reason this is intuitively understood is because of interactions not consciously remembered. All humans give the call and do so frequently during any given lifetime. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. The call can be simply curiosity. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Curiosity, written July 1995. The ancient Greeks studied more than philosophy in their debates. They studied the ways of nature, physics, astronomy, and chemistry. In those days, the going opinion was that the world was flat, and the heavens were doing a dance at the whim of the gods, whoever they might be. They had no microscopes, no accelerators or centrifugal machines, and were incapable of separating chemicals to test out their theories. They did not even have a concept of subatomic particles. How could they when matter was only falling into categories of solid, liquid, vapor, and spirit? Yet one man, Democritus, theorized that matter had the same base component, and that they were tiny balls and clumps of few or many, tiny balls that moved swiftly or stood still, and clung to each other or had a life of independence, molecules. How did the concept rise in one never exposed to even the concept of a solar system, orbiting planets around a central sun, much less the elements in the atomic table in their theoretical subatomic structure? Democritus was given to quiet times in his garden, where he pondered such simple wonders as raindrops and the ripples they caused in puddles. In essence, he gave the call, and was heard by aliens who spent many hours with him, on repeated occasions, demonstrating how things work. Democritus would be returned to his garden, where his wife thought he had been all along, to sort all this out. Where the aliens answering his call may have found a ready student, Democritus was not so lucky with his fellow man, who ridiculed him for what they considered his preposterous positions. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Or prayer may be considered giving the call. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Prayer, written July 1995. When one sends a prayer aloft to their God, are they in essence giving the call? Depends on the prayer and on the intent behind the prayer in particular. Many prayers are routine, done in the same hurried manner as brushing the teeth, to put the task behind one. Other prayers, though routine, are done in a fond manner, full of feeling, and this may or may not be the call. Does the prayer simply give thanks for home, health, and bounty? This is then in the same category as meditating on one's circumstances and acknowledging that much of life is outside of one's control. Where prayers are put forth with feeling and include a request, this is in essence the call, and regardless of the words used or to whom the prayer is addressed, the one answering the call will be responding to the intent, not the words. Should one ask, with words, that one's little sister be protected, but ask in the heart and mind that she meet with an untimely death, one has not given the call to the service to others. Likewise, prayers that ask for blessings for the self are most likely to bring the service to self in answer. Sincere prayers for others, on the other hand, are a call to the service to others, such as ourselves. For those who say that in this statement we are asserting that we are God's angels, we would respond that all God's creatures who respond in love to help another are God's angels, including humans now on earth. What is an angel, after all, but one who waits to help when needed or when called? End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Queries made during seances can likewise be considered the call, and I quote from Zeta Talk, Seances, written May 1997. Talking with the dead has been a time-honored endeavor, and all human cultures have terms for and tales about this common human experience. Most of the tales are told by those who recently lost a loved one, and the bond continues for a time due to unfinished business and concerns that the recently deceased has about those still living. The most famous tales are told about hauntings, where a particular spirit hangs about a location, such as a house, wanting some kind of justice done, or lingering due to past attachments. Seances, where the dead are deliberately called, are a form of the call, and as such fall under the rules whereby more than the loved one can arrive. Thus, a seance can bring forth the spirit called, other restless spirits, formerly human spirits, and various visiting aliens who may or may not materialize, depending on the setting. A group of people fervently asking a spirit to manifest, to communicate with them, will reach that spirit by one means or another. That the spirit does not manifest is due not to the call failing to reach this spirit, but to reluctance or disinterest. If the spirit has incarnated again and is caught up in a new life, they may dismiss the call to them without giving it a thought. If the spirit was tired of the talk about a subject or obligations that were imposed by those who are now calling it, the spirit may turn its back and refuse to participate, free at last in death. If the spirit likewise has been longing to communicate, it may take the opportunity, or may decide that a one-on-one with this or that individual is preferable, and make their own arrangements later, haunting the one they wish to communicate with. When the call is given to a spirit that incarnated as a human, this spirit can be called for its most recent life, the most recent incarnation, or can be called for one of its past lives. All are remembered by the spirit as vividly as the most recent incarnation. However, this setting is virtually begging for interference by service-to-self aliens looking to influence humans at every opportunity. Most calls to spirits who incarnated famous or influential humans in the past are done not for altruistic reasons, but for personal gain. Where did you bury the gold? What was the missing piece to the puzzle that would allow an idea to be patented? Where are the manuscripts stored, etc.? Thus, the call has been given to the service to self, who are notable for lying and leading astray. Pretending to be the spirit called is easy, and feeding the self-serving tendencies of the humans giving the call easier still. Identity cards cannot be checked at seances, so anyone and anything might manifest, pretending to be the spirit called. End of the quote from Zeta Tau. Clearly, as a telephone is not used to deliver the call, there is some mechanism in place. Just what is the physical means used to deliver the call? Aliens in the service to others scan for the call using telepathy, but aliens in the service to self don't use this means, as it puts them into a potentially empathetic position, anathema for their ruthless and uncaring posture. They use a surprising means to scan for humans leaning to the service to self. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Service to Self Call, written June 1996. Where visitors in the service to other keep rapt attention to the thoughts of those who are preparing to give the call, those in the service to self find such attention to others not of their liking. They delegate. Their minions are set to monitor for the signs that someone is giving the call to the service to self. This is done not by telepathy, but by computer, which traces, surprisingly enough, a brainwave configuration generated when humans are dealing either with rage or intense defensive postures. This brainwave is generated almost continuously in those strongly in the service to self, as they are constantly enraged that their surroundings aren't placating them. It is not the level of this brainwave that is monitored, it is the constancy, and when located, this individual is watched more closely. They may get a specific invitation periodically, as their brainwave configuration has marked them as one in the service to self, in essence giving the call continuously due to their frustration. Of a like mind, one might say. End of the quote from Zeta Tau. Can the call be refused by the human who may have inadvertently given it? Certainly, as the human is always in charge. They can, in essence, just quickly hang up, disconnect, decline the invitation, or cut it short. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Just Say No, written July 1995. As spiritual entities allowed to have contact with humans are either service to self or service to others, their orientation is acute and easily discernible. One has but to pay attention. Even the spiritually immature can decipher the difference. Your human archetypes suffice. The service-to-self entities that respond to the call of humans are on the hunt, looking for prey. And the humans vulnerable to their domination and control are the hunted. You should not allow yourself to be overpowered as you can decide. The human too often does not understand that non-humans are not allowed to overpower humans except by permission. Where with humans the unreasonable demand is often supplanted with amelioration, this is not the case with non-human demands from the service to self. Their demands are insatiable. And to give in to these demands only leads one to join their ranks. A firm line should be drawn. If one has determined not to join the service to self orientation and is leaning toward cooperation and empathy with others, then the line should be drawn absolutely. End of the quote from Zeta Talk on Just Say No. In that our world is a schoolhouse for very young souls, immature, it's not easy for humans to discern whether they have reached out in a selfless manner, out of concern for others, or in a self-serving manner, looking to better themselves. For instance, if I wish to have my broken leg fixed so that I can support my family, is this selfish or selfless? And I quote from Zeta Talk, Unaware, written November 1995. Humans are astonished to learn that they have given the call and can dismiss alien encounters at will, as they have no awareness of this. Being unaware, they assume that someone else is in charge. However, even though the visit was recorded only in the subconscious, there are definite signs that the call has been given and answered. Take the example of a small-town banker who, late in life of quiet adherence to all the rules of social propriety and fiscal responsibility, begins to see. Life has passed him by, and he sees his declining years before him with no chance of a reprieve. He wants to break out of the mold, but doesn't know how. He feels angry at his stocky wife, with whom intimacy long ago died, and wishes to be rid of her. He approaches stop signs in his conservative car and brakes reluctantly, wanting to gun through the intersection nonstop. He finds himself staring at the balance sheets that pass before him, musing about what money can and can't do for a person. In short, he is at one of those times that occur several times during a lifetime when he is giving the call, whether he's aware of it or not. Now, since the banker is focused on himself at this time, the call has been extended to those in the service to self orientation. He's perhaps visited in the bank while working after hours and is encouraged in his line of thinking. Take the money and run. Pick up someone young and appreciative elsewhere. Money can buy love. That type of encouragement. Two possible outcomes are most likely. In one, the banker, emboldened by the unhesitating encouragement he has received, embezzles. Finding this deed undiscovered the next day, he embezzles more. And then feeling that he has tempted fate after a few days or weeks, he bolts for the border. In the other outcome, the banker allows himself to contemplate the results of his planned actions, but is distressed at the thought of his friends and neighbors having to make up the loss. He puts his rebellious feelings aside and distracts himself with a new hobby, such as gardening. In both outcomes, the banker has marked the change in his life as a result of having given the call. His friends and family notice that he moves from brooding and irritability to either acting out of character by absconding with the money, or for unexplained reasons becomes a more devoted husband and gardener. In like manner, humans who have given the call to those in the service to other orientation may suddenly find courage to confront oppression, give away possessions to others not in need, or rescue others they formerly ignored, all the while unaware. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. If the call is given most often while the human is unaware and visitations are recorded only in the subconscious, then how can a person tell that a conference has occurred? Other than indications like bolting for the border with the money or taking up gardening. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Intuition, written December 1995. Humans are accustomed to suspecting their thoughts and conclusions, and learning of the alien presence only adds to this unease. On top of having a subconscious they find they can't deal with directly, and a conscious that is selective in what it will entertain and is prone to modifying memory, they now learn that aliens are slipping in and out of their view. Can one trust one's own perceptions? In all of this, there are several solid anchors which cross levels of human consciousness and the various densities that incarnated entities can reside in. Where the human conscious is fickle, the subconscious neither forgets or lies, and where ordinarily a human can only tap the subconscious through the veil of consciousness, the voice of the subconscious is never silenced, Some humans call staying in tune with their subconscious intuition, or following their hunches or gut feelings. But all this is just a sense that what is consciously presented may not be all that's going on. In like manner, those who are spiritually aware are keeping their mind and spirit in close touch, constantly updating the human subconscious with what the spirit perceives interdimensionally during communications with other entities of whatever density. Thus, intuition can serve as the glue by which a human stays consciously in touch with activities it is not consciously aware of, as lack of faith in one's intuition can leave one open to surprises. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Converse to popular expectations, incantations or emblems do not bring about a call unless accompanied by intent, wishes, desire for a conference. Thus, the emblem or incantation alone does not bring about the call, but the desire for a conference alone can constitute a call. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Incantations, written July 1996. Permeating human culture is the notion that one can influence events with magical words, prayers, mantras, voodoo spells, and black magic. Advocates point to what they consider results, where a practitioner mutters the right words and afterwards the desired effect occurred. Much of the desired effect is brought about in the human giving the chant to his audience due to suggestion. The practitioner and his audience believe the effect will occur and adjust their lives and actions to the degree they can so this will occur. Thus, if the chant was to make an ill person well, the person will announce that they indeed feel better, and their caregivers will affirm this. Since health is as much in the mind of the patient and his attendants as in the actual physical state of the patient, an observed improvement is quite possible. What lies outside of the practitioner's control falls in the realm of possibility in any case, so that when things happen, they are attributed to the chant, not chance. Thus, an incantation to generate rainfall will be credited with the next storm that occurs, where in fact rain was pending anyway. Incantations can also be the call if done with a sincere wish for assistance outside of oneself. Ordinarily, the practitioner and his audience are fervently desiring the outcome, and thus the call is being given. Here, something extraordinary may occur, as multiple calls have been given, and all may be answered simultaneously. Each individual in this drama may thus have a different mindset as a result of their individual conferences. They may have received new information or new insight into matters. The synergy of this change within several individuals can result in extraordinary activity on the part of the group, activity that results in an outcome not previously possible. Should the call have been from a seaside community suffering from poor catches, and many individuals in the community suddenly realize they have been fishing in the wrong place or at the wrong times, the catches may improve dramatically. All is attributed to the incantations, when in fact the exact words had nothing to do with the process. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. So, in that there are 6 billion people on Earth, are there 6 billion aliens hanging around just in case the call is given? Just as giving the call is voluntary on the part of the human, answering is somewhat voluntary, although the call is almost invariably answered without delay. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Without Delay, written October 1995. The call is almost often answered as soon as it is given, unless the nature of the call is such that preparation or timing are involved. An example of preparations might involve the human giving the call needing to gather information or poll other humans, essentially preparing themselves for the conference. An example of timing might be where the call involves a conference with several humans, and a convenient time when they could all experience a bit of missing time needs to be arranged. The nature of the call is such that the group called, whether in service to self or service to other, does not want the moment to pass. Delays can result in a change of heart, so the call is answered promptly. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. But some calls are given preferential treatment, for instance, a call from a president or a pope or a talk show host. The reason is obvious, as these people have greater impact on the course of human affairs. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Leadership Call, written October 1995. Is the call handled in a different manner when it comes from a high-level government official, a leader such as a president or premier? Under ordinary circumstances, the call is treated much the same, without regard to the caller's position, as those responding are concerned with influencing the calling human to choose the orientation of those called. Whether the call comes from a toddler being raised in the slums or an adult running an international corporation, in both cases, the focus is the same, the soul of the caller. However, where the human giving the call is in a leadership position, the call gets more attention for obvious reasons. Many humans assumed to be in a leadership position are not, in actuality, leading anyone. They may have authority, such as the right to grant or deny requests, or may have a voice, such as the right to critique, or may direct activities, such as a construction or production schedule, but they do not influence the orientation decision of their fellow humans. Leaders who get a lot of attention are those who influence issues such as lawmaking, where subjugation or freedom may result, or war, where great numbers of humans will be obliged or coerced into committing atrocities to one another, or new trends and solutions where innovative ways to assist one another may emerge or be stifled. Such leaders get the mega-call response, where more resources are mustered. The leader, however, is as unaware, consciously, of having been assisted as are all other callers. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. More than these people are targeted for a quick and strong response to the call. If the service to self wish to disrupt and distract a good-hearted and influential contactee from their mission, they target those around them. Why? Because a good-hearted influential person may not be able to be dissuaded, but they can certainly be distracted. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Prime Targets, written August 1996. Those humans deemed to be prime targets by service-to-self aliens are often individuals who might make a difference. These humans, almost invariably contactees of aliens in the service-to-other orientation, are not so much targeted directly as indirectly. Others close to them, children, employers, the extended family, neighbors, find their call answered promptly. A team of specialists explore to the limits possible how the human who gave the call might be enlisted to harass and demoralize the target. This harassment is notable for being outside of what the target normally finds in their life, and this is the primary clue the target should be looking for. What are the methods used, and how might a target recognize them if they are applied to themselves or their friends? Contactees in service to others concentrate hard on their mission, filled with concern for those they are trying to rescue or protect. Where those in the service to self, whether alien visitors or humans, cannot often turn the head of such a human, they can distract them. If the target depends on family or friends or employer, the reliability of such support is threatened or interrupted. Thus, the target may find his work performance suddenly questioned, his spouse becoming disinterested as though having an affair were in process, or the local bully take an interest in power games. Contactees in service to self derive satisfaction from helping others, and where they focus on making a difference in the long term, rather than on short-term expressions of gratitude, they're only human, as you say, and can become demoralized. Often those humans who the target is trying to help can be influenced by those in the service to self, as their lives are fraught with trouble, and this kind of stress tends to make one self-focused. Thus, the target may find those he's trying to help surly, brushing off his offers, rejecting the premise of the assistance, demanding to be given more or different assistance, or frankly, insulting. Contactees in service to others have their strengths and weaknesses, and can be targeted through what might be called personal weak links. If the target feels insecure about their looks, they may find others that come in contact with drawing back as though they have bad breath or are exuding an offensive odor. If the target is worried about financial security, they may find that their broker is calling with bad news. If the target simply can't say no to aging relatives in distress over a diminished lifestyle or health problems, the target may find they are inundated with calls for help in the face of such distress. If the target can't resist a pretty face or an admirer, they may find themselves embroiled in a romantic affair that leads at first to distractions in the form of excitement, and later in the form of grief and rumination over a broken affair. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. If leaders, or those in a position to influence a leader, get an unusually strong response to their call, a technology call also gets an unusual screening. Alien technology, or advice in this direction, is closely controlled. We humans on Earth are not to have technology that would allow us to travel about the universe, especially in the hands of the service-to-self humans, who would use this to intimidate their way into power and control over others. But what about technology in the hands of good-hearted people? Is this an exception? And I quote from Zeta Talk, Technological Call, written July 1995. Many call for assistance with technological advances, such as free energy machines. At this time, we are restrained from simply giving mankind a gift by the rules set by the Council of Worlds. Mankind, as scientists or researchers, can, however, give the call for assistance on technological progress, and it is possible that this call will be answered. How are these calls sorted out, and what determines whether a call such as this will be answered or not? In the main, there is far more desire than capacity. The caller must be able to understand our instructions, our explanations. This requirement again narrows down the possibilities, as perhaps only 1% of the callers who are positioned to assure the technological device will not be misused, and who are truly of the service to others orientation, qualify. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. I, Nancy, get a lot of email from folks wanting to be used as a vehicle for technology, and always direct them to the call section, as of course I, Nancy, am not part of the process. I also get a lot of email from folks wanting to run a website like Zeta Talk, deliver the message as Zeta Talk does. They ask me why I qualified, and my answer is, do very little to education and position, which might gain me credibility, and almost exclusively to my track record on not giving in to service-to-self ploys. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Prophecy, written June 1999. Prophecy occurs because a human has given the call, as the desire to relay important messages is strong, and in addition, they are considered a vehicle that is true, where the message given to them will not be distorted or diminished. Therefore, it's very rare that the quality of the individual is such that they are charismatic, they are important enough that they are taken seriously, and they are a true vehicle that can communicate with a visitor from another world. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. What are some famous examples of folks who gave the call and the result? For instance, what about Edgar Cayce and Michael Gordon Scallion? Did they get their information from having given the call? And I quote from Zeta Talk, Edgar Cayce, written May 1996. Prophets bearing impelling messages are invariably inspired. Their message grips those hearing it because it carries a view humans under their own power could not have come by. unlike false prophets, whose pronouncements fall flat almost as soon as they are made, the words uttered by true prophets have a ring of truth, a thousand facets of reality lining up to support the prophecy as it unfolds. Prophets are remembered or gain notoriety where their track record was astonishing in its accuracy or immense in its impact. Edgar Cayce, due to his accuracy on small personal matters and the resultant widespread notoriety, is living in memory still for his predictions on geological changes. His visions are most certainly inspired by a group of extraterrestrial entities, unknown and unnamed by humans, who operate disincarnate at a high level within the service to other orientation. Cayce was thus instrumental in alerting many about the coming changes, the tentacles of his prophetic reach spreading into many cultures and lands. He was selected from among the many who gave the call asking for such prophetic assists, not only because of his nature, which was greatly devoted to the general welfare, but also because of his natural gifts. Immensely telepathic for a human, and allowing himself to be in tune with all aspects of the humans he healed, and in touch with all disincarnate entities willing to assist with the healing, he wasted not himself or his helpers in any of his endeavors. His gift of healing and his highly accurate intuition spread his fame, which in turn bolstered the widespread belief in his prophecies. For those lucky enough to be entranced by his words, his message has not been lost. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Scallion's Predictions, written April 1997. Michael Gordon Scallion is a gifted visionary on par with Edgar Cayce in his time. That his visions are not identified as exceptional is due to the maxim that visionaries are not valued in their present day to the extent they are when time has passed. Cayce, Nostradamus, and other great prophets likewise were treated with as much disdain as admiration during their day, and only gained their present stature over time. Mankind tends to treat their prophets like gods, raising them to this stature when the abilities are first recognized, and then angrily rejecting them if they are not consistently accurate. Like children forever seeking a parent that will not leave or fail them, they demand perfection, when they themselves are far from perfect. Scallion, like Cayce, is being guided in his visions as a result of having given the call and being considered a worthy vehicle to relay messages to mankind. Just as some channeled work reflects genuine input from extraterrestrials, some prophets are likewise getting this input. As with all human interpretation of the input they receive, Scallion colors what he hears with his own judgments and spin. All humans have mindsets and preconceptions that color what they hear and choose to pass on to others. There's a game played in human society where all stand in a circle and whisper a statement around the circle, one to another until the statement returns to the originator, who can scarcely recognize it for what it was when it left his lips. All humans have a limited ability to comprehend the totality of what they learn. A child hearing an explanation for how an airplane can fly, the airlift under the wings, could scarcely pass this information on to others, or would do so by inserting misconceptions. The concept grasped is the one relayed, not the concept given. All humans reach a saturation point when given a great deal of information all at once. Complex concepts often require many factors to be considered at once, and thus a human hearing all the factors may grasp the end result, but not remember all the factors. Thus, when relaying this complex concept to others, they omit crucial factors so that the second party does not form the same end result in their mind. All humans, when listening to a prophet, pick and choose what they elect to hear. If the message is distressing, they select only those parts of the message that comfort. Just as the witnesses to an accident often recount vastly different interpretations of what occurred, just so the audience of a prophet retains surprisingly different summations of what was said. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Not surprisingly, Mary and Joseph, per the Zetas, gave the call, and the result was the virgin birth of Jesus. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Virgin Birth, written July 1995. The mother of Jesus did indeed have a virgin birth, and correctly ascribed this to a visit from an entity not of the earth, an entity she called an angel. Jesus was the product of the union between Mary's egg and a man's sperm. Her husband Joseph, an old man, was impotent with old age. She required a donor, but was not the type of woman to be unfaithful to her husband, no matter what the mission. She was assisted in her desire to bear a child, to bear this special child, as both she and Joseph had given the call to service to other entities strongly and repeatedly, and understood full well the hardships their life might bear because of it. As artificial insemination was an unknown science in those days, the virgin birth was explained as best the people knew how. Thus, the story as told is essentially correct. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. And not surprisingly, Joan of Arc. And I quote from Zeta Talk on Joan of Arc, written December 2002. Joan was intent on countering what she viewed as brutality in the church. She gave the call and was counseled, but her decisions were her own. The view from many that God speaks directly to this or that human is faulty, in that most such imagined communications are with spirits. Her desire to communicate and her responses were akin thus to the call only. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. But the service to self also have their converts, famous individuals who have given the call for self-serving reasons, Hitler and those around him, for instance. And I quote from Zeta Talk on Hitler, written June 1996. Most often those strongly in the service to self do not announce themselves to the world, but prefer to hide behind a buffer, preferably a shield that can become a scapegoat if necessary. When one is pulling power plays, the battle can get bloody, and the scapegoat is then the one meeting with an accident. When one is going on a personal power trip by torturing others, the victims can escape and return seeking vengeance, and the scapegoat is then the one savaged. If one is operating outside the law, the operation can be discovered, and the scapegoat goes to jail. If one's behavior is scandalizing society's sense of propriety, the scapegoat is left to explain. Thus, not surprisingly, the most hated Nazi leaders were not necessarily the driving force behind the worst of the Nazi deeds. The gas chambers and experiments on human subjects were not matters ordered or even conceived by Hitler, who was a charismatic speaker, but basically a man without much backbone. His rumored suicide was an act this weak man would not have been up to. It was murder to silence his blubbering mouth. Thus, the true perpetrators were in the main secret members of the Nazi elite who met quietly in small groups and were never in the spotlight. If Hitler's guard was running them as a puppet and considered him to be their buffer, then the real driver considered the guard their buffer, and thus to this day history does not blame them. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. What about the circumstances when many people may be simultaneously giving the call about the same issue? This involves continuous interaction between those calling and those answering, so it's very dynamic. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Simultaneous Call, written July 1995. Can there be conflicting calls, situations where there is a conflict in calls given simultaneously in the same human drama? This can and does happen. An example, friends are sitting around the same living room. One is feeling insecure and is given to desire more power over others. The insecure one gives the call, and a response comes from the ambassadors from the service to self. They may remove this insecure one from the living room for a conference. They may freeze the others in the room to allow time for this conference to occur. Now the insecure one has returned, emboldened. Meanwhile, in conflict, a friend in the room is concerned about the insecure one. This friend gives the call to ambassadors from the Service to Others orientation. They, simultaneously, come to confer with the concerned friend. These conferences may, in fact, occur at the same time. It could happen that while the insecure one was conferring with the Service to Self alien entities, the concerned friend was off also conferring with the Service to Other alien entities. All others in the living room, as spectators, are frozen in place, awaiting the return of the others. Now, returned from their conference, the insecure one and the concerned friend are returned, while the others in the living room are awake. All are not consciously aware that anything at all has happened. They, in all likelihood, think that nothing at all has occurred, and that no time at all has passed from the instant before these conferences. Such is the nature of alien entity interactions with humans. The frozen state and the conscious forgetfulness are utterly common. The insecure one, emboldened, makes his power move, perhaps with new insights into what it will take to intimidate those he wishes to have under his control. The concerned friend, also having conferred, will counter these moves with insight, perhaps bolstering the insecure one in unexpected ways, so that the game plan given by the Service to Self crowd does not come into play, as not needed or relied upon. These dramas have come into play in the past, are happening today, and will unfold in the future. Even when humans have evolved spiritually into their next density, fourth density, there will be such dramas, as there will be spiritual entities of higher density to advise one when given the call. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Can there be something like a collective or mass call? For instance, if everyone on a certain day at a certain time simultaneously thinks fervently about a certain issue? And I quote from Zeta Talk, Collective Call, written April 2002. In the first place, there's no such thing. Where votes can be collected in this manner, each individual gives the call based on their own concerns. And even if in verbal and conscious agreement, on this or that day, at this or that hour, to put forth a call with greater intensity, these calls would differ. Thus we're back to treating the individuals, and in like manner, the call results in action only through individual humans. Since the call is for a conference, as we as aliens can only consult, the best that could be done would be to inform and encourage a concerned human to take action themselves. In all cases, action is by humans, not aliens as parents coming to the rescue. You are in charge of the world, your Earth, and you must take action to make a difference. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. But what about Satanism, where the group, dressed in robes, stands around chanting and then something happens, or so the story goes? Isn't that a collective call? And I quote from Zeta Talk, Satanic Rituals, written July 1995. Invoking the dark forces through magical incantations has been part of man's history from the start, for as long as entities incarnated into human form have been giving the call to the Service to Self. The desire for revenge, to eliminate a rival, to steal from another, to increase personal power at the expense of others, all these desires are such a call. The magical incantation or ritual, such as pentagram on the floor, have nothing to do with the call being given or answered, but practices that set the mood do. For instance, sacrifice or bloodletting, particularly of an innocent or someone the participants are reluctant to sacrifice due to personal bonds, sets the mood. During such acts, the participants increasingly disconnect their empathy toward another and concentrate on the self-satisfying goals that led them to the ritual. Are babies sacrificed and by their mothers? Yes, but not as often as the public has been led to believe. Most often the human sacrificed is a peripheral member of the group, so that the cult leader can go on a power trip. He glorifies in his ability to make friends turn on one another at his command. Such power trips become such a drug that more and more such rituals are performed, and the outcome goes one of two ways. Most often the band goes into greater and greater depths of degradation, sexual acts, perverse in the extreme, self-humiliation of members, who may be required to eat each other's feces. Each conveying of the cult requires a step further, so that the leader can experience another high. Matters seldom plateau. Eventually, matters become so extreme so that the situation comes under public notice. Small children are disappearing, animal parts discovered, people breaking down and crying for no reason. Everyone gets nervous and members of the band just bolt. Clothes in the suitcase, gas up the car, and go. Separation brings a return to normalcy. The cult members find themselves wandering into churches and grasping at some explanation outside of themselves. They were possessed. They were under the influence of others. Surely it wasn't them. Destabilized, the band often breaks up entirely and may or may not reform later, perhaps with others or elsewhere. The leader is most likely to restart, but in a new location where things aren't so hot. The second scenario occurs when the band has a lot of reluctance. At first, the satanic rituals were a sport. Let's see what happens. When matters take their course, they result in arguments, and the arguments increase as the leader's demands on the group increase. Capped in this way, things fritter out. Do satanic rituals result in demons appearing and humans striking a deal with the devil? This is a parody on what in fact happens, as it's not so cut and dried. The service-to-self entities answering the call may appear to the band, but briefly. These demons may take any form, as they are above Earth's density and thus can move between densities, appearing and disappearing at will. They may show themselves as they are or enhance their appearance to strike fear into the horrified humans and demand and get the subservience that all service-to-self entities seek without abatement. The humans are indeed giving their souls away as they are joining the service-to-self orientation, where control and captivity are an everyday reality. Can the demons invoke deliver? No. All actions on Earth are due to humans, so rewards can only come from humans. As we are talking here of the service-to-self crowd, beneficence toward others is not likely. Moreover, the service-to-self are not known for truthfulness and would lie in any manner to induce humans to follow a path that would benefit the entity answering the call. Does the human want a shiny new car? He shall have it. Just kill the child. Of course, the car never arrives, but the human has often delivered his end of the bargain. Satanic ritual is a one-way street. Humans go to hell and get nothing for it. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. And where are the spirit guides in all of this? Aren't we supposed to have a spirit guide who hangs around, keeping small children from running in front of a truck or falling off cliffs? Or is that wishful thinking? And I quote from Zeta Talk, Spirit Guides, written April 1996. Spirit guides act as monitors and become involved in certain types of calls, but not all. Spirit guides are never those in the service to self. The reason is obvious, as they would scarcely concern themselves with others. Thus, spirit guides are in essence entities in the service to others who are active as administrators on spiritual matters. Humans often assign a parental role to their spirit guides, as the spirit guides help determine the site and circumstances of their next incarnation. It is natural for humans to expect the spirit guides to act as human parents do, ensuring that they are clothed and fed, safe from danger, and rescued if in a spot. Spirit guides do not do these functions. As we have stated, incarnations is a self-teaching experiment, and the Earth is a world where new entities with emerging inclinations to be either service to self or service to other mix freely. Spirit guides are not spirit overseers, spirit parents, spirit policemen, spirit nurses, or spirit governors. The guides are available for the call, but beyond that, they do not interfere. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Ah, there's that rule of non-interference again. We've come full circle back to the start of the hour. That concludes our broadcast. Thank you for being with us. Remember to carry love in your heart. It's the commodity of the future. As the Zetas say, love may have a blooming going into the shift, as it ought. Those with great love in their hearts responding to the realization that little else matters.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.